It's Friday, August 1st, 2008, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Hooray and welcome to Friday, Stashers. Glad to have you here for the show. I'm really excited because I just concluded my interview with Representative Barney Frank from Washington, D.C. on his H.R. 5843 bill. It's quite an honor to have the representative on the show, and that interview will be coming up right after our hemp headlines. Also, today is our Celebrity Stoner Day with Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com. Today we'll be talking about the Cheech and Chong reunion tour and a little bit about the Cannabis College Review from the Princeton Review. So stay tuned for that. Also, we've got a winner in our Pass the Stash contest, Jimmy from Oregon, who's the big winner of the AKA Tommy Chong DVD. And we'll give you a little bit more information on that later on in the show. Plus, our usual Toker Tunes musical break, courtesy of Cannabis Carry, so that we can chill out and get ready for the weekend. So sit back and relax, grab yourself some munchies and a nice spliff, and enjoy your normal daily audio stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. SWAT team kills two dogs in raid on Maryland mayor's home. Berwyn Heights, Maryland. A SWAT team raided the home of a Washington, D.C. area mayor, killing his two black Labrador retrievers and seizing an unopened package of marijuana delivered there. Prince George's County Police said Berwyn Heights Mayor Che Calvo brought a 32-pound package of marijuana into his home that had been delivered by officers posing as delivery men. The Tuesday evening raid was conducted by County Police narcotics officers and a Sheriff's Office SWAT team. Sheriff's Office spokesman Sergeant Mario Ellis says deputies apparently felt threatened when they shot the dogs. Calvo said officers entered at about 7:30 p.m., first shooting 7-year-old Peyton. Then they pursued 4-year-old Chase, who ran away and was shot by police from behind, he said. It takes a special kind of man to shoot a fleeing dog in the back, especially a black lab. Everybody knows what a vicious reputation that breed has, if you're a duck. The worst thing that dog would probably have ever done to a decent human being not participating in a SWAT raid is lick him to death. Obviously, the first shot at the older dog made such a noise that the second dog was scared off. Could you have not just fired a warning shot to scare both the dogs off? And furthermore, this case seems a little sketchy to me. This 32-pound package was left out on the doorstep of this man because it had been addressed to him from an address in Arizona. The fact that it had been addressed to him is enough to make your case. The fact that the man picks it up and takes it into his house doesn't help your case any, because he could be completely innocent and not know what was being mailed to him, and just naturally picking up a package that's sitting outside your doorstep and bringing it into your house in no way proves that you knew what was coming in the package. This smells a lot to me like a setup of a political nature to make the mayor look bad. Fed sees medical marijuana taken in Seattle raid, from the Seattle Times. The federal government has gotten involved in the case of a medical marijuana patient support group that was raided recently by Seattle police. According to the Seattle Police Department, the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration has taken control of the marijuana seized during the raid on the Lifevine Cooperative 2 weeks ago. That raid made headlines largely because police seized hundreds of medical marijuana patient files. King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg declined to press charges against the man who runs the group, Martin Martinez, and had the files returned to him. But Seattle police didn't immediately return the 12 ounces of dried marijuana bud or several pounds of less potent leaves, and the DEA took that last Friday. Martinez's lawyer, Douglas Hyatt, had asked the police department to return the marijuana, arguing that Martinez had a legal right to it under Washington's medical marijuana law. However, because marijuana is illegal under federal law, U.S. Attorney Jeff Sullivan asked the DEA to take it and destroy it. Accordingly, the DEA has seized and processed the marijuana for destruction. That concludes this matter, the agency said Wednesday in a statement released by Seattle-based spokeswoman Jody Underwood. The city of Seattle has voted to make enforcement of marijuana laws the lowest priority for law enforcement, and yet Seattle police raided a legal medical marijuana group. The state of Washington has voted to make medicinal use of marijuana protected under law, and yet Seattle police turns over patients' medicine to the DEA for destruction. What's the point of having a representative democracy if the local police force feels it can overrule the will of the people? DEA agents raid Culver City Medical Marijuana Dispensary, from the Los Angeles Times. Federal agents raided a Culver City medical marijuana dispensary where they spent more than 4 hours this afternoon, serving a search warrant that resulted in no arrests but left the shop in disarray. The federal operation came on the same day an appellate court in San Diego ruled that federal law does not preempt the state's law allowing the use of medical marijuana, a ruling touted by supporters of California's medical marijuana law as a significant win. At the dispensary, agents left behind trash, counters strewn with open and empty glass jars, piles of receipts thrown on the ground, upturned couch cushions, bits of marijuana on the edges of counters, and an ATM with its doors torn open and emptied. In the residents' rooms, a safe was cut open, dresser drawers pulled open, and rumpled clothes and knickknacks thrown on the ground. An outdoor vegetable garden had plants uprooted, along with marijuana plants removed by the agents. Brian V. Berbiglia, age 35, sat handcuffed next to DEA agents on a tattered couch outside the dispensary for more than 4 hours during the raid. Next to the couch sat a box marked DEA evidence, about a dozen black trash bags, and two Trader Joe's paper bags. Some agents wore protective chest gear, black sunglasses, and guns in leg holsters. After the raid was over and he was released, Berbiglia was visibly enraged. An employee and friend of the dispensary's owner, Jeff Joseph, Berbiglia said he is a disabled former Marine who has a prescription to smoke marijuana for a foot injury. "We follow the law," he yelled, his face red and his eyes teary. "We might as well have just got robbed by a bunch of thugs downtown." Clyde Carey, age 50, of Marina Del Rey, was at the store Friday visiting a friend when agents burst in through the locked front door, he said. Quote, "We heard some noise outside, and then the door literally burst in, and the DEA came in full combat gear, told everybody to get on the floor and put their hands behind their heads. It was like, literally, an episode of 24, when they bust in on a terrorist cell," end quote. Another smash-and-grab federal robbery. Another raid where there are no arrests. Another example of state-sponsored terrorism in action. No, the DEA doesn't equal Al-Qaeda. They're not killing anybody directly. But these raids do not stop dispensaries, and they do not arrest so-called criminals. So their only purpose is to terrorize the proprietors and customers of the dispensaries. Even if I take the prohibitionist view, however, I can't see how this helps their cause. All they are doing is creating more dedicated activists and martyrs and making their side look arbitrary and capricious.
it's time to play Pass the Stash, where you can win cool prizes from Normal.
All right, we got a lot of great entries in our latest Pass the Stash contest. The contest was to see which listener got busted with the smallest amount of pot. Many of you have even been harassed or arrested for less than a gram or even for specks of marijuana. Daryl in Washington writes, I had less than 0.5 gram of marijuana in a film container. When the motorcycle officer felt it in my pocket, he asked, what's this? I told him it was film and not to open it, but he did, and he took me to jail. Daryl, next time get an attorney. If you refuse to consent to a search of that container and he searched anyway, your charges could have been dismissed by the judge. Adam in Tennessee writes, imagine you had 3 nicely rolled joints in a baggie. You remove the joints from the bag and you got an empty baggie with like 3 specks of shake that fell out from the joints. The complaint affidavit states I had a, quote, bag containing a residue amount of green leafy material was found, end quote. And Gomyo in Japan writes, at the station, they questioned me for another 10 hours or so and showed me the supposed evidence they had found in my car. They had gotten it out of the ashtray. They actually went searching through the ash under a microscope or whatever, finding a speck about the size of the tip of a pencil lead that they assured me had been tested and was indeed marijuana. Now, Brandon, he didn't enter the contest, but he passed me along a story that we had covered on the Stash as well. This is a story from Dubai, United Arab Emirates, or hell on earth for potheads, where a man traveling from Britain was sentenced to 4 years in Dubai prison after a speck of marijuana weighing less than a grain of sugar was found in the tread of his shoe. In all, it was an amount of 0.003 grams. But my winner today is Jimmy from Oregon. Jimmy's a registered grower and caregiver in the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, and yet still, he was charged and fined $300 for possession of a baggie with sticky residue on it. Not even a speck, just sticky residue. Well, thanks to everyone who played Pass the Stash, and Jimmy, you get ready because your copy of the DVD, aka Tommy Chong, the documentary from Josh Gilbert that details Tommy Chong's 9 months in prison for selling bongs on the internet, it's on its way to you, and thanks for playing Pass the Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Congressman Barney Frank has represented Massachusetts' 4th District since 1981 and is a champion of civil rights on Capitol Hill. This Wednesday, he announced his bill to end federal penalties for the personal possession of marijuana, the first such legislation introduced in about 30 years. So thank you for joining us on the show, Representative Frank.
You're welcome. I'm glad I have a chance to continue to carry the word.
Well, I wanted to ask you, you've been a champion of this issue in one form or another. I know you've sponsored the state's rights to medical marijuana bill, which has had some trouble getting through the House. So what encouraged you to move forward now with full decriminalization, which is much more controversial?
Well, it is a position I, frankly, have been advocating for, because I did this when I was in the state legislature in Massachusetts in 1973 and 1974. I thought now it was time to be able to do it. Look, I've always felt this, but you don't want to raise an issue, at least I don't want to raise an issue, if I think the overwhelming reaction is going to be negative, because people can kind of get locked in a negative way. I have felt for some time now that the public is clearly ahead of the politicians on this one. That's not always the case. There are issues where I think the public sometimes doesn't see through some propaganda. But it did occur to me that the public, and particularly young people, were ahead. It's also, frankly, partly because we have the Internet now. You know, this is not an issue that the newspapers and networks are going to give a lot of attention to, but the Internet exists as a way to communicate with people who care about this. And I particularly, frankly, I've been pleased to see that a lot of younger people have gotten, it seems, more interested in politics these days, probably because Senator Obama appeals to them, also because of the environmental issue. And, you know, that's an obvious one. When I speak to student audiences, I say, you know, look, in terms of global warming, you know, by the time it really gets bad, I'll be dead. So I would assume you guys would be the ones that want to deal with it. So it did seem to me this is a good time to begin this discussion because I think the public is ready to educate my colleagues and because you got a lot of young people who will join in.
Now, you're close to the end of the session, so it's likely that this bill would be heard and debated in the next Congress. Do you feel that there's going to be a significant difference in the opinion of the upcoming Congress on this issue?
There will be. Look, I don't think we're going to be able to get it passed in the next Congress or two. I am optimistic we'll ultimately be doing this. What you really need to do is begin the conversation. I need my colleagues to be hearing from people. That's why I'm really glad that you know, we're able to do this, and I've done some other radio interviews. A number of my colleagues already, because there's been some publicity on it, came to me and said, hey, I was in my district and, you know, somebody said, but I signed on to your bill, tell me about it. So what we need, this is one where the public's going to have to give the lead to the members of Congress, but I think that can happen.
Now, this debate is one that's kind of different than a lot of other debates on Capitol Hill because you're going to get significant pushback on this from the executive branch in the form of the ONDCP, which is mandated by law to oppose any sort of measures that might decriminalize or
yeah,
legislate cannabis.
I think that will diminish when we are rid of the Bush administration and its extreme right-wing operation. I must say it is interesting at a time when the administration tells us they can't afford to put money into cleaning up Superfund sites or helping us with public transportation or providing adequate health care even to veterans who are coming back from Iraq, that they can spend all this money on an office that's been very ineffective. And, you know, the idea that a paid employee of the federal government was out there handing out this propaganda, I have no objection to it in principle. I think people should be able to speak, but it is an example of the waste of time and effort.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there are 12 states in America now that regulate the use of medical marijuana, and California in particular has been victimized by DEA raids on those dispensaries. How would this bill affect
If this bill passed, either bill, because we have the medical marijuana bill, this is a border bill, it would say that at the very least, well, two ways. If this bill passed, the patients would no longer be subject to harassment. You would need the medical marijuana bill to protect the clinics as well. So I'd want to see both bills passed. But as you know, as you said, you know, I'll give credit to Janet Reno. When she was Attorney General, she did not do this. John Ashcroft became Attorney General in this right-wing administration and started prosecuting very sick people who were following California law to take marijuana. Really a despicable set of activity, it seems to me. Either bill would stop that with regard to the patients. You'd need both bills to be able to protect the clinics.
Okay. Now, just north of California in Oregon, there's some cannabis supporters there that are putting together a measure that would tax and regulate the sales of marijuana through liquor stores in the state. Would this bill help in that realm, or are we going to have to go
further? It would allow them to, I take it back. You'd have to go beyond that because this bill is for personal use and nonprofit distribution, in effect, sharing. I agree with that proposal. But, you know, I want to have the debate about the basic principle about whether or not the federal government should be regulating people's private lives. Now, ultimately, you would want to get to that, but I don't want it to be distorted into, oh, you're going to have these massive distributions. I mean, the principle, by the way, and I want to address one argument, which I hope some of the people listening will also be able to use. One of the questions I get is, well, why are you encouraging the use of marijuana? And the answer is, I'm not. There's this notion that's really very antithetical to the kind of government we want to live in. It says that, well, human activity is divided into two categories. One, things that should be criminal. Two, things that the government is encouraging. And there are some things I want to encourage. I do want to encourage energy conservation, and I think we should encourage people to exercise and, you know, eat healthy in some ways. But on the whole, the view ought to be that what you choose to do on your leisure time is your own. And the fact that it isn't illegal doesn't mean I'm encouraging it. People do a lot of things in this society that I don't do, that if you ask my advice, I'd say, gee, I don't know why you'd want to do that, but I shouldn't make them criminal. And that's what we're saying with smoking marijuana. This notion that if the government doesn't send you to jail for it, the government's telling you to do it, misunderstands the nature of a free government.
Good point. That's a black and white thinking there. Now, some critics might point out here that the bill, as it's written right now, allows the possession of up to 100 grams of marijuana, about 3.5 ounces. And some people might point out that that's an extreme amount. How did you come up with that amount?
Well, we tried to have a margin that people wouldn't be unduly harassed for. To be honest, the details at this point are less important than getting the principle out there.
Okay.
And, you know, you don't want people who have a personal use stash to get caught up in this in a way. As I said, there's no exactitude here, and I would hope we could debate the principle. Obviously, we'd be flexible on the specifics when we got to it.
Okay. Another line of attack that I can envision here is people saying that by decriminalizing the possession without doing anything about the sales, all you do is create more of a market for the black market that already exists that causes all the harms of marijuana.
Well, we couldn't be doing that. Anybody with any sense of reality understands that there's a flourishing black market now, because one of the oddest defenses I get of the law is, well, don't repeal the law, it's not being enforced. And that's a terrible way to deal with the law. You don't want to tell police officers and others, look, we don't really care about this law, so we're going to keep it on the books, but we're going to tell you not to enforce it. I mean, the notion that there's any deterrent effect in the law right now, I think it's very small.
Okay. Now, you're in Massachusetts, up in the Northeast, and I'm calling you from Portland, Oregon, out in the West. And our areas of the country seem to be a lot more tolerant to marijuana use and its users. Why is there, in your opinion, such opposition in Washington and in some other places in the country to this notion?
Well, I think it's cultural lag. Look, people have seen drugs do bad things to people, but in particular, marijuana became identified first in the 30s and later in the 60s. With kind of countercultural activity. It was identified with musicians who engaged in interracial dating at a time in the 30s when the prejudices on race were so strong. In the 60s, it particularly became identified with people who were against the war. And I think that's why it's hard to understand in rational terms why you have this crusade on the books with people like the ONDCP against marijuana and you know, not at all against alcohol. So I think it has to do with cultural things. But the other point I would make is this. You know, the politicians today are people most of whose careers began 20, 30, and 40 years ago. I think the average voter today is much less obsessed with this. And indeed, as you look at the younger people, they think it's silly. So I think this is one where, particularly over the years coming forward, the politicians, as I said, are going to be educated by the public to lose their fear of doing the right thing.
Now, Congressman Frank, when you first announced this on the Bill Maher show, you had made the point that you've been in office for so long now that you really don't care what other people might think of you doing this. What do you think the political ramifications might be, though, for other?
Well, I did say I thought I could get away with it now, and I may have been misinterpreted. What I really meant was I think that we can have a public debate now where there'll be a lot of support for it. Personally, look, people, when I first ran for office, people used this against me because I'd advocated it in the state legislature, so it was used against me in campaigns of 1882. I genuinely believe that the average citizen understands that this is a silly law. And as I said, I think the public's ahead of the politicians. So what I was trying to do was to get to my colleagues and say, look, don't be afraid of doing the right thing here.
Okay. Now, as far as the nuts and bolts of Congress, where does this bill head next? Has it made it to committee? Will it be assigned?
It will be assigned to committee because I'm dealing with criminal penalties. It'll go to the Judiciary Committee primarily. And I don't expect anything to happen for the rest of this year, but I would hope that we could have some hearings on it next year. You know, look, as you have mentioned, we've had the state's rights to medical marijuana law. That started out with a few votes, a handful of votes. It's now getting 40% of the House up in 170, 180 range. It's not there yet, but it's moving, and I think the same thing will happen here once we start talking about it.
Excellent. Well, Congressman Barney Frank has is the chief sponsor of the H.R. 5843 bill, the bill to end federal penalties for the use of marijuana by responsible adults. And, sir, we thank you very much for joining us here on the show.
Thank you, and I'm glad that we had a chance to talk some more.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers. And nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Here at the NORML Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Welcome to a very special musical stash today. Not only is it Friday, my favorite day of the week, but today we get all lovey-dovey with Jet Baker as he is about to release his new CD, Stoner Love Songs. Jet makes no secret that he likes pot, but today's musical hit puts it to verse with I Like Pot. Jet is a strong warrior for cannabis reform, and his wacky and fabulous comedy is his weapon of choice. Jet began his journey into marijuana music by winning a High Times contest where he won a trip to the Amsterdam Cannabis Cup in 2000. It was filmed for the first High Times reality show. He has been part of the crew at the Cannabis Cup ever since, hosting the Wake and Bake Amsterdam show each morning at the Cannabis Cup Expo. Since that historic event in 2000, Jet has become the most prolific marijuana musician in the world, with over 100 tracks about weed on iTunes. You can even find his music on Amazon and Walmart.com these days. Yes, Jet has done so much in the last 8 years to get our message into the mainstream. As he puts it, cannabis is here to stay. Frickin' decriminalize it already. Hear, hear, Jet. You can join in on the fun at Jet Baker's CD release party this coming Monday in Austin, Texas at the Ruta Maya. The show starts at 9:30, and he is donating the CD and merchandise sales to NORML. More information about this event is at his website, www.jetrap.com, or you can just visit his MySpace page, which we have links to at our blog, stash.normal.org. By the way, the Stash website is the only place, the exclusive source, for this free download of Jet Baker's newest tune, I Like Pot.
Hey, what's up? This is Jet Baker, and I like pot. But I love NORML. NORML is actually influencing changes in marijuana laws. Are you helping? This is my love song to you, NORML. It's from my new CD, Stoner Love Songs. And the only place on earth you can download it for free, legally, is NORML.org. Hey y'all, it's me again, Jet Baker here. Will you be my friend? I'll make the weed jams, rockin' Amsterdam, in a pink and green and silver tiny microvan. Nice strut, nice bud, bust a nut, that's enough of that slut smut. To clear up all confusion, truth not illusion, truth not delusion, I have come to this conclusion. I like pot, I like it a lot. I like pot, I like it a lot. Puffin' on the KB 420 is where you'll find me, 'cause I like pot. I like pot. I like it a lot. This would come as no surprise to those guys with red eyes and bliss bunnies worldwide. Tried and true, true and tried. It's jetrap.com if you're new. And all the Jet Baker tracks are on iTunes too. I hope you like my electronic supersonic sound. If you feel me, pass the joint and pass it round and round. Tell all of your friends where the music has been found. Share the love and pass the Jet Baker MP3s around. I like pot. I like it a lot. I like pot. I like it a lot. Puffin' on the KB 420 is where you'll find me, 'cause I like pot. I like pot. I like it a lot. All around the world, boys and girls, they like pot too, just like you do. I bet money that you think right now, you're probably like, how did he know that? Wow, like I'm a mind reader or something like that. What? You're listening to a track called I Like Pot. So I figured you're baked now, right? Yeah, I'm smart like that. Plus you fully read, man. I like pot. I like it a lot. Now, how's everybody feeling? Woo! If you feel the same way I do and you know the words, join right in. I like pot. I like it a lot. I like pot. I like it a lot. Everybody. I like pot. I like it a lot. If you know the words, jump right in. I like pot. I like it a lot. Puffin' on the KB 420 is where you'll find me, 'cause I like pot. Puffin' on the KB 420 is where you'll find me, 'cause I like pot. I like pot. I like it a lot. I like pot. I like it a lot. So did you donate to Normal yet? They could really use your help. Love you, Normal.
Just say no.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, The A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoked marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoked marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life at Amazon.com or visit PotCultureBook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
Well, once again, we've made it to the weekend and the first weekend of August. And once again, we're glad to have Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com joining us with all the latest celebrity and entertainment news in the cannabis community. Steve, welcome back to the Stash.
Hey, Russ. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. You know, it was a big week this week. We had Representative Barney Frank announcing his press conference for H.R. 5843 to end penalties for adult marijuana possession. But on that very same day on the West Coast, we had probably the biggest celebrity stoner news of the year, didn't we?
Yeah, I suppose that might be. If it was a big day, there were press conferences both in Washington for Barney Frank and in L.A. for Cheech and Chong, who announced their reunion tour that's beginning in September and will continue into December. 24 cities right now. Looks like they might have a few more slots to fill in, but for the time being, these are the dates they announced. And this was a big deal. I mean, Cheech and Chong have not performed together, you know, with one or two exceptions since the mid-80s when they ended their relationship as actors in the series of movies that they were in, Up in Smoke, Still Smoking, Next Movie, Nice Dreams, and then things started to peter out. Those are their four great movies, and then, or their four most famous movies, and then, you know, they started going their separate ways. And over time, it, you know, there was sort of a real split, you know, that Tommy remained true to his character, being, you know, the sort of dopey stoner, and Cheech had kind of left that behind, and he went into mainstream acting. And over the years, it appeared that Tommy was kind of upset with Cheech, because I believe that there were offers before now to do reunions of some fashion, whether it be a comedy tour, a movie, something or other, a one-shot deal here or there. And Cheech seemed to turn everything down, so Tommy started to get really kind of angry with Cheech, mm-hmm. because Tommy, you know, wasn't really making as much money as Cheech, and, you know, he was kind of holding him back. And so Tommy would take a lot of shots at Cheech over the years. And then after Tommy was arrested in 2003 for the paraphernalia charge for selling the Chong Bongs interstate, went to jail for 9 months from 2003 to 2004, that seemed to rekindle the friendship. I think, obviously, you know, Cheech took a sympathetic, you know, ear to Tommy's situation. And when Tommy got out of jail, he made an appearance on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and Cheech showed up as a surprise. And from that point on, they've sort of been friendlier. They went off and did a one-shot reunion show at the Comedy Arts Festival in Aspen that year, and then haven't done anything since. So it's taken 4 years for them to finally put it together to get this tour going. So it'll be very exciting. If people don't remember, I mean, Cheech and Chong are famous for Up in Smoke in the movies, but they started as a stand-up comedy duo back in the late 60s when Tommy met Cheech in Vancouver. Tommy's Canadian. He was working in Vancouver, and Cheech was kind of just touring around doing maybe some, you know, stand-up, and they met and they formed their team, and they did stand-up comedy for years before they became, you know, famous for their acting roles. And they have, you know, numerous albums, and I'm sure many people, you know, listeners out there have or know about it, especially the Big Bamboo album, 1973, looked like the cover, you know, of the Big Bamboo rolling paper, and inside was the huge sheet of rolling paper. So it's been a long time coming. I call them the Stoner Sunshine Boys because if you remember the movie The Sunshine Boys, you know, the two comedians who got back together after all the years didn't get along and still didn't get along when they went back out together. So we'll see what happens with Cheech and Chong. Basically, you know, Cheech said, there's this veiled hatred. We've kind of resolved that. We've gotten to the age where we don't feel like fighting anymore because the end is a lot closer than the beginning. So Tommy is pushing 70. Cheech is 62. You know, so I guess they're looking at their lives and saying, hey, if we don't do this stuff now, when? You know, you know, who knows? I mean, even though Tommy's in great shape, you never know when you start getting up in age, you know, that something could possibly happen. So, you know, now or never.
Yeah.
And thankfully, you know, they decided now.
Yeah, and the tour dates are listed up on Celeb Stoner website, so check them out at celebstoner.com.
Yeah, starting in Philadelphia, by the way, on September 12th, so anybody in the Philly area, go get your tickets. The tickets go on sale, by the way, they start going on sale on August 8th, and they're being the sale begins at 4:20.
That's right, a week from today, so Friday, August 8th, 4:20 p.m.
It's a Live Nation tour, so that's where the tickets are going to be sold via Live Nation. So you go to the Live Nation website or go to Celeb Stoner and follow the links.
Yeah, I think it's livenation.com, and you can get the tickets there. Yeah, and that's something I'll be looking forward to. I know they're swinging by in the Pacific Northwest. They're swinging by Seattle, so I'll probably be taking the train up there to catch that show. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, honestly, Celeb Stoner will be in Philadelphia for the first night.
Excellent. We'll get a report from you on that.
Absolutely. We're based in New York, so it's easy for us to hop down the turnpike.
Now, the another story here that's kind of interesting, another one of our favorite Celeb Stoners, Snoop Dogg got a little, well, not Snoop Dogg himself, but his tour bus got pulled over and busted in Texas, was it?
Yes, in Texas. That happened yesterday. Snoop Dogg has been on tour with 311, the Unity Tour, and they're basically wrapping up the tour. They're finishing it up in Texas, and they had a show last night in Dallas. They have two shows this weekend in Austin. They finish up this, you know, 5-week tour. You know, you could imagine it's a pretty stony tour between those two bands, and as it turns out, the police, you know, who knows, might have been following Snoop Dogg's bus as it went along Route 145 in Texas. It was a kind of a small town Corsicana, where the bus was pulled over, and, you know, of course they found some sort of violation. In this case, it was an expired registration sticker. You know, hey, listen, you gotta stay clean on the road as far as, like, having everything just right, but nevertheless, they found something. And, you know, the second they opened the door, you can imagine, you know, there was marijuana smoke kind of came pouring out. And they hopped on the bus, and they found 2 ounces of pot, who knows where. And they arrested 2 guys on the bus. Snoop Dogg was not arrested, although I'm sure he was smoking that marijuana. So, you know, he dodged this bust. You know, unfortunately for the guys, you know, they had to take the hit. We don't really know too much more about it other than that right now. There's no other news reports on it.
Yeah, we'll follow it up as we get some more details. And another story that you had up on the Celeb Stoner website, which we also covered on the Stash, was the recently released list of, I guess you'd call them, the stoniest colleges in America.
Yeah, well, the Princeton Review does their yearly, as you know, you head into the latest, you know, college, you know, beginning of the college year in September, and they come out with their multiple categories rating schools, the smartest, the whatever, maybe not the dumbest, but, you know, they have different categories, and the categories that sort of interest, you know, us are, they used to have a category just party schools, and now they've kind of refined it to, you know, they call it like reefer madness for some silly reason schools. That's the category under reefer madness, which basically means the widest use of marijuana on campuses, schools all over the country. That's based on their interviews. You know, if they do, you know, they must do them kind of clandestinely, asking a lot of students, you know, who smokes, you know, how much pot is smoked on a given campus. And they reach their conclusions. In the last couple of years, they've determined that the number one college are small schools, small liberal arts colleges. And this year, the winning school on the list is Bard College, which is based in New York State. It's, in the area called the Hudson Valley, near the Catskill Mountains, near Woodstock, Saugerties, and all the areas that are sort of famous for being kind of counterculture havens in upstate New York. 1,600 students, and last year the winning school was Warren Wilson, which is a small school in North Carolina. So those two swapped positions. Now Warren Wilson is number two, and then the number third spot is a more likely, you know, school that everybody knows, you know, for its reputation, University of Colorado at Boulder. That went up from 15 last year to 3 this year. So I have a feeling the 420 explosion on the campus there had a big impact on their ranking going up. The number 4 college is the University of Vermont at Burlington. That was number 3 last year. Number 5 is New College of Florida, which has always had kind of a stony reputation. It's one of the smaller schools on the list. And they kind of, you know, they moved up and down a few spots. I mean, I could give you the whole list if you want, but what you see is there's a little bit of a shift of, like, some new schools on the list, and like for, you know, your home area, amazingly, University of Oregon at Eugene was not on the list last year, and it now is on the list at number 14. So there's a little bit of shifting back and forth, but it's, you know, some of the schools that you'd expect: University of California, Santa Cruz, let's say University of West Virginia, Morgantown, University of California, Santa Barbara, University of New Hampshire, or Durham, that's sort of a new one. But then they have a lot of small schools: Ithaca College, New York, Sarah Lawrence College, New York, Eugene Lang College, part of the New School, New York, a lot of New York schools, Hampshire College in Massachusetts, Colorado College, which is in Colorado Springs, that was new on the list, Gifford College in North Carolina, Wesleyan's in Connecticut, Skidmore, New York, Pitzer in California, Eckerd in Florida. So a lot of small schools made the list. And it's pretty close. I mean, what they don't include are some of the schools that we listed in my book, Pot Culture. Our schools, which weren't in order, they were just alphabetical. I mean, how could you not include Humboldt State?
Yeah.
Apparently that hasn't made the Princeton list for the last few years. We included New York University here in New York, Oberlin in Ohio, Reed College, one that you had mentioned in your Stash report online and your blog. You know, how could Reed College be left off, you know, based in Oregon? We had University of California, Santa Cruz, University of Colorado, Boulder, University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, University of Vermont, Boulder, and University of Wisconsin, Madison. You know, our list included sort of traditional schools like Ann Arbor and Madison that are sort of famous for their activism, and that didn't make it onto the Princeton list, though.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of, you know, I mentioned this is kind of a hard thing to compile because these college students could lose their financial aid if they're caught, you know, using marijuana. So a lot of schools, I know there's a lot of activism down in University of Central Florida is another one where there's a lot of activism, but no, these people aren't necessarily going to be honest about it.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not. And, you know, we don't know how hip they are really are to go after the right schools. But, you know, I'm not really sure of their methods. You know, we just find it interesting those colleges get selected, although not really sure how they figure it out.
Yeah. Well, we can check out the whole...
They do a lot of interviews. I forget the number, but they do, you know, I think thousands of interviews with students to add, you know, to compile these lists.
Yeah. Well, you can check out the full list at celebstoner.com. And if you want to nominate your college, send me an email at stash.normal.org. We'll see if we can get the attention of the Princeton Review people and get your school up on the list a little higher. Pardon the pun.
Can I make one more point?
Oh, sure.
Today being August 1st, a lot of deadheads are going to be paying tribute to Jerry Garcia, who was born in 1942 on this day. I'm going to be heading up to Gathering of the Vibes, which is a nice festival that they've been having. It's being held in Connecticut now. It moved around the Northeast over the last few years. And that festival started after Jerry died. It was a tribute to Jerry and the Dead. And tomorrow, up at the Gathering of the Vibes, it'll be kind of Grateful Dead Day with Phil Lesh and Friends and other Grateful Dead influenced bands playing throughout the day. So, you know, dig into your record collection and put on some Grateful Dead today and remember Jerry.
Yeah, happy Jerry's birthday to everyone out there. Steve Bloom is the webmaster out at celebstoner.com, and thanks for joining us again this Friday.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes. This one is some reefer madness from Andrea Barthwell, the former deputy drug czar under George W. Bush. Quote,
"If there were compelling scientific and medical data supporting marijuana's medical benefits, that would be one thing, but the data is not there. The claim of one individual who has used marijuana does not medical data make. Marijuana has not gone through the test of science because it is a botanical and it doesn't have the same effect on every individual."
End quote. Yeah, it hasn't passed the scientific rigors like Vioxx or Chantix? Yeah, and 5,000 years of human use of cannabis isn't enough of a test for you. It's the same old reefer madness year in and year out. And we're doing our best here to fight that here at the Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks for joining us, and tell a friend. Log on to stash.normal.org and spread the word. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here this week, and we'll be back next week. And until that time, take care of each other, tokers.